Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 39 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 26th of September 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Dusty, Margaret and Julie. And in the news, the Winter Gardens refurb is finally starting. The boat involved in the North Sea collision leaves the harbour. And there's a barge walking around the wind farm, honestly. Details on these and many other local stories in just a while, plus the Vision Norfolk activities for October, and before we finish, Grapevine Extra, this week with the three ladies reminiscing for England. But first, a birthday, and our best wishes this week go out to Stephen Miller, celebrating next Monday, the 26th. Have a great day, Stephen. OK, time to get down to the nitty-gritty. So, over to Dusty, Margaret and Julie for the first part of the local news.
Hello, everybody. It's lovely to be back here with you again. And I have to say, the first item that I have to read is quite interesting, and perhaps it's just as well that I was once upon a time a police officer and I know exactly what all this is about. Otherwise, a reader might be embarrassed, but I'm not. So here we go. Suspended sentence for indecent exposure. A former doorman has been handed a suspended sentence of 3 months in prison for flashing three women in a week. Robert Grayson appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Monday, September the 22nd, where he was given a sentence of 12 weeks in jail, suspended for 18 months. The 36-year-old, with an address at Fakes Road in Hemsby, previously pleaded guilty to three charges of indecent exposure. On two of these occasions, he targeted lone women, purporting to ask them for directions and then expose himself to them. The court previously heard that on June the 3rd, Grayson pulled up outside the Hemsby property of a woman he had known for 30 years. When she came out of her home to say hello, he wound down the window and exposed himself to her. The woman believed he was masturbating. The incident left the woman feeling very emotional, confused and scared, and when she next saw his car from her house, she hid beneath the window. 2 days later, Grayson was parked in Newport Road in Hemsby when he called out to a woman who was holidaying at Sundowner Holiday Park, asking for directions to the Bel Air site. When she went over to help, he smirked at her and appeared to be laughing. She then noticed he had his private parts out and he was wiggling it about before he drove off. On June the 10th at about around 9:15 a.m, Grayson drove towards a woman who was walking on the pavement on California Road in Scratby. He wound down the window and asked for directions to a shop, and the victim thought it was odd that he wasn't responding to her before she realised he was flicking his private parts around in his hand. After Grayson drove off, the woman ran to the nearby Angelo Cafe and called the police. Grayson later told officers that he, in quotes, thought this would help his erectile dysfunction. His sentencing also included being monitored for abstaining from alcohol for 120 days and a requirement to take part in mental health treatment.
Well, hello everyone, it's Julie here. My first story is about the Winter Gardens restoration. So restoration work has started on one of the town's most distinctive buildings. The Winter Gardens on Marine Parade closed in 2008 over safety fears, and since then the Grade 2 listed Victorian venue has fallen into dereliction and disrepair. It really does look dreadful. But workers have now moved onto the site and started the long-awaited 19 million regeneration. They have been busy with initial preparation work, installing hoardings, the first steps in bringing the building back to life. Last month, the council appointed Vinci Building as the main contractor for the project and said that work would soon begin on cleaning the existing ironwork. On its Facebook page, Greater Yarmouth Borough Council said, "This incredible restoration has been made possible thanks to the National Lottery players. Together, we are hoping to secure the future of the Winter Gardens for generations to come. The Victorian-era building on the Golden Mile is set to become a so-called People's Palace, with cafes and community spaces when it reopens in 2028. Work on the building will see the restoration of its original features, including cast and wrought iron ironworks, and lost details of timber screens to recapture its past grandeur, along with new services for the community. The designs also include new glazing, heating and cooling systems, significant planting, rainwater harvesting, irrigation and low energy, and decarbonisation for what is the UK's last surviving Victorian glasshouse on a seaside promenade. Over the years, it was used for tea dances, roller skating and other entertainment."
Yes, and this is about the death of a former mayor of Great Yarmouth. In the days before his death, Terry Easter was transferred to a hospital ward he had opened himself when he was mayor of Great Yarmouth. One of the doctors at the James Paget in Galston took a photo of the plaque on the wall commemorating the event and showed it to Mr. Easter. It was an emotional moment, as the former councillor, who had been living with dementia for 4 years, briefly recognised the legacy he had left in the borough. Mr. Easter, who was a member of the Great Yarmouth Borough Council for 30 years, has died at the age of 88. He was born in Oulton Broad on March the 31st, 1937. One of five boys, he attended the grammar school in Lowestoft, a rarity in those days for a person from his background. But when the family finances allowed only one of the brothers, the eldest, to pursue further education, Mr. Easter had to leave school at 16 and take up a printing apprenticeship at Clues in Beggles. At 18, he was called up for national service to the RAF, but his dreams of an exotic stint in East Asia were dashed when instead he was posted much closer to home, to Horsham St Faith, outside Norwich. And instead of taking to the air, he ended up working in the underground radar station. In his later years, he often remarked on the irony. Once his conscription had finished, Mr. Easter returned to the printing business and soon set out on his journey into politics, when he signed up as a union rep and then joined the Labour Party. And it was while socialising at the party's club in Great Yarmouth that he met his second wife, Jenny. Mr. Easter already had three daughters from a previous marriage. With Jenny, he went on to have a fourth daughter, and all the siblings lived together in a blended family. He was elected as a borough councillor in 1981 and was mayor of Great Yarmouth from 2008 to 2009. He was so proud. It was a very full year, with 3 to 4 events every day, his daughter Gaynor Reed said. Of all his work at the council, He was most proud of his role in the seven-year-old battle to get an all-weather track at Wellesley Recreation Ground. Miss Reed said her father was drawn to local politics so that he could speak up for the people who couldn't speak up for themselves. While council meetings absorbed many of his nights, by day he enjoyed a varied career. He worked as a manager first at Woolworths in Great Yarmouth and then at KFC in Beccles. He was also the printer for Great Yarmouth Art College until it closed in 1989 and then took his expertise to Norwich University of the Arts. Away from work and late-night council meetings, Mr. Easter loved sport, especially cricket and darts, and was rumoured to have enjoyed the pole vault as a young man. He was diagnosed with dementia during COVID and died at the James Paget Hospital on September the 15th. Mr. Easter's funeral will take place on Monday, October the 6th, at Goulston Crematorium. It will be family flowers only, and the deceased's chosen charity is the Great Yarmouth and Goulston Memory Club.
A caravan parked in Kitchener Road in Great Yarmouth has been destroyed in a fire. Five crews were called at around 11:30 p.m. on Wednesday to the scene. Crews from Great Yarmouth tackled the blaze for just over half an hour, eventually leaving at around 12:05 a.m. Police officers went to the scene and put a cordon in place around the caravan. A spokeswoman for the force confirmed that an investigation into the cause of the fire has begun. Nobody was in the caravan at the time of the fire. Caravans in Kitchener Road have been an issue in the area, with Norfolk County Council ordering two to be moved earlier this year. A letter threatened that if the caravans were not moved, the council would seek a court order to have them removed, and vehicle owners could be issued with a fine exceeding £1,000.
The Sea Life Centre in Great Yarmouth and Hunstanton are set to host Halloween-themed events. From October the 18th to November the 2nd, visitors can join Seraphina, the Sea Witch's Army of Sea Defenders. By following an immersive trail, participants can help keep sea creatures safe and learn about ocean care. The event promises magical challenges and treats for those who help the Sea Witch. For more information, visit www.visitsealife.com. And they're going to have a lot of fun there, I think.
In the Style, founder Adam Frisby from Great Yarmouth launches Reason, that's spelled R-E-A-S-N. An entrepreneur from Great Yarmouth is launching a new fashion brand after a lengthy legal battle over website business in The Style. Adam Frisby has announced that he is behind Reason, an inclusive clothing company, and has teamed up with influencer Perry Sean Walker to make the brand a reality. Shoppers will be able to browse an online collection of clothes from October the 5th. In a video announcing the new brand, Frisby said, "I started in The Style with six dresses. I had £1,000 to my name. I could never have imagined what the next 10 years would bring." In 2021, Frisby's In The Style was valued at £100 million on the London Stock Exchange. But shortly after, he was caught up in a lengthy legal battle after someone else claimed that he had stolen the idea from them. "It was very clear that I'd got into bed with the wrong people," he said. "I had to walk away from the business that I loved and founded. And I remember thinking, I've lost my purpose." He stepped down as CEO in 2023 and left the business entirely in the following year. Reason is his first venture back into the fashion world after leaving In The Style, and Frisby has described it as a bit of a comeback. Now it feels very different, he explained. I called Perry Walker at the end of 2024 and just said that deep down I'd always wanted it to be her. I'm really proud of what we've come up with. Brand clothing concept. You know, everything happens for a reason.
A woman has been left terrified and traumatised after witnessing a bulldog savagely attack her dog on their daily walk. Singer Tiki Dimitriou, known as Tiggy, said her pet, called Teddy, was yelping in both pain and fear as the out-of-control animal bit her dog's leg and refused to let go. When it eventually did, the bulldog charged at Teddy two more times, leaving the Labrador cross Staffy cross Whippet with multiple wounds. The incident happened on September the 4th in Marine Parade in Great Yarmouth. The dog charged at Teddy and got hold of my dog's leg and would not let it go. I started screaming and shouting in a panic, Tiggy said. Tiggy managed to intervene and grab the attacking animal's mouth, and eventually it let go of Teddy. I can't get the incident out of my head, and I feel traumatised to go to the seafront again. It is so upsetting, Tiggy said. I have walked Teddy on that road for 10 years, but I won't go down there any more. Teddy was left with multiple bite marks and one particularly deep wound. He needed stitches to the cuts, which cost Tiggy more than £3,100 in vet's bills. A Norfolk police spokeswoman said, officers attended the scene and the dog was seized whilst enquiries were made to identify the owner. The owner of the dog was identified later that day and a dog incident form was issued. This form imposed the following conditions. When in public, the dog must be on a lead at all times and only persons aged 16 and over can walk or be in control of the dog.
Norfolk has a higher proportion of children getting extra support for special educational needs than almost anywhere else in the country, prompting new fears for the county's finances. Among comparable councils, only one other area in England has a higher rate of children with education, health and care plans, EHCPs. Once a child is judged to require such a plan, they become eligible for special measures to support their education, such as one-to-one teaching, extra therapy and equipment. This places additional costs on the County Council, which has seen its spending on special educational needs and disabilities soar in recent years. National politicians have warned the system is no longer sustainable and is overwhelming councils' finances, reducing their ability to spend in other areas. Last year, the number of Norfolk youngsters with EHCPs increased by more than 1,000, with the increase far outstripping the national average. It means that almost 1 in 15 Norfolk pupils now have such a plan, which can be granted for conditions including depression and anxiety. The figures have sparked questions over why the county is an outlier and whether the area has different assessment standards or if Norfolk is actually better at providing support for those with more complex needs than elsewhere. EHCPs are legal documents that set out the support required for young people with special educational needs and disabilities. Children and young people who might get EHCPs, including those who have learning difficulties or disabilities, which make it harder for them to learn. It can include youngsters with physical disabilities, autism spectrum conditions, ADHD, cerebral palsy, development delays, trauma-related needs or mental health conditions such as depression and anxiety.
One of the region's biggest bus services has been taken over by a national transport group. Go East Anglia, which operates Connect Bus across Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex, has been acquired by Transport Made Simple, one of the UK's largest independently owned passenger transport providers. The acquisition, expected to be completed next month, will see the local bus services join Transport Made Simple's existing operations, which include the Central Connect Flag Flanders and Simmons brands. No immediate changes are planned to the services following the takeover.
A man is due to appear in court next month after being charged with 11 offences. Richard Patterson, aged 33, was arrested following a series of offences in Great Yarmouth. Patterson, from the Lingwood area but of no fixed abode, was charged with 4 counts of driving, otherwise than in accordance with a licence. He has also been charged with 4 counts of driving without insurance, an offence of failing to provide a specimen for analysis, for theft and criminal damage. Patterson is due to appear at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on October the 8th.
A man has been taken to hospital after falling on the beach. The man fell and broke his leg on South Beach Parade in Yarmouth at 10 a.m. on Wednesday. Coast Guard rescue teams from Galston and Lowestoft attended, as well as the East of England Ambulance Service. A spokesman for East of England Ambulance Services said the man was taken to the James Paget Hospital for further care.
A lifeboat was called out to help a boat which had run aground. Humber Coast Guard asked for Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat to launch at 5:50 p.m. on September the 21st. The vessel was located at Three Mile House on the River Bure and had a disabled person on board who needed to be moved to safety. The volunteer crew arrived to find the boat tied up alongside the riverbank, no longer aground. A friend of the man had arrived before the lifeboat and had taken off all passengers. The man decided to be towed by the friend to Stokesby, so the lifeboat crew helped in setting up an alongside tow between the two cruisers. The lifeboat was then stood down and returned to the station.
Well, a bit less news this week than normal, so the second and last batch coming shortly after the monthly Vision Norfolk What's On. Dusty has the details.
Now we have some news from Vision Norfolk. Edward has asked us to tell you the following. He says, I just wanted to alert you to some large-scale roadworks that are taking place near our office. Due to works being carried out by City Fibre, there is no vehicular access to the Great Yarmouth Hub at 12 Hall Quay. This is due to a number of things that are being repaired and worked on. And we think you should know that people with sight loss and impaired vision may require guidance, especially across from Hall Quay, near Havenbridge and the Town Hall, which is open, of course, to pedestrians. The pavements are not impeded. So we are feeling that you may well have difficulty in getting to the hub, so please don't be afraid to ask anybody to give you a hand. Now, it's the time of the month when we are pleased to give you the October activities at Vision Norfolk, starting with, and there's a lot of these, with the coffee mornings. Great Yarmouth First. This month's caffeine adventures at the Yarmouth Hub are on Wednesdays, the 1st of October, the 8th, the 15th, the 22nd and the 29th. I'll give you those again because I expect you're probably writing them down in your diary. 1st of October, the first one, is the 8th, the 15th, the 22nd and the 29th, all from 10 till 12. Martham's Coffee Morning is on Thursday the 2nd and Caister's event is on Tuesday the 7th and 21st. So that's Coffee Mornings Thursday the 2nd and Caister's event is on Tuesday the 7th and 21st again from 10 o'clock to 12 noon. Now the Cribbage Group, I've never played cribbage in my life, I don't know what it's like, but anyway. The Cribbage Group meets for October and they are on Thursday the 2nd, the 9th, the 16th and 23rd and 30th. The 2nd, the 9th, the 16th and 23rd and 30th, all from 10 to 12. Weaving is on Friday the 3rd, 17th and 24th, again from 10 to 12, Friday the 3rd, the 17th and the 24th, with basket weaving on Friday the 10th at the same times. So I don't know what the other weaving is, however. The rest of the activities are as follows. Thursday the 2nd sees the introduction of the pub club from 1 to 3, also happening at the same time on Thursday the 16th. Thursday the 2nd and the 16th, the pub club. Ask the staff for more details on this. October's Fishy Friday is on the 3rd from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesday the 8th is the sculpture trail from 12:30 to 3, followed on Thursday the 9th with knit, stitch and natter from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. I know that's a very popular one. So Friday the 10th, October, sees creative writing from until 1 till 3. That's lovely. And on Monday the 13th, it's October's Burger and Bingo. Burger and Bingo sounds attractive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Note that the hub is closed on Tuesday the 14th. It's actually closed on Tuesday the 14th. So, Wednesday the 15th and the 22nd of October, it's yoga from 12:30 until 1:30. Tuesday the 28th of October is a trip to Dotty Pottery. Please get in touch with the Great Yarmouth Hub for availability and more information. Thursday the 30th is quiz and cake from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And again, please ask a member of staff for more information on that one. Now, finally, Friday the 31st is the rug workshop from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So don't let anybody pull that from under your feet. And the Great Yarmouth Audio Book Club from 1 p.m. to 3. And for more information about the Audio Book Club, please get in touch with Mark or Helen on Norwich 01603, that is, 573-000, extension 341. That's all to do with the Audio Book Club. Well, you've got a lovely lot of stuff there to choose from, and I hope you have some interesting and entertaining times.
Thanks, Dusty. Okay, it's time to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
Yarmouth fundraisers raised £2,575 for Vision Norfolk. A 50-mile tandem ride and a 12-hour sponsored silence have helped raise more than £2,500 for a sight loss charity. Great Yarmouth fundraisers Miranda Reeves and Ed Bates completed their challenges in support of Vision Norfolk's 220 Challenge, which aims to raise £220,000 during the charity's 220th anniversary year. Mrs. Reeves, who lost significant sight in December 2023 due to optic neuropathy, raised £1,710 by cycling 50 miles on a tandem with her husband Robert. The pair visited Bradwell, Borough Castle, Belton, Galston, Caister, Ormsby St Margaret, California, Scratby, Hemsby, Hopton, Courton and Lowestoft. Quite a bike ride, isn't it? Mr. Bates, manager of Vision Norfolk Great Yarmouth Hub, raised £865 with a 12-hour sponsored silence. Born completely blind, he managed the challenge despite colleagues trying to break it and even completed a silent gym session with his personal trainer. Joe Russell, fundraising manager at Vision Norfolk, said, "We are very grateful both to Miranda and Robert and to Ed and all the generous people who supported their fundraising efforts in and around Great Yarmouth. We have set ourselves an ambitious fundraising target during our anniversary year, and we would love to hear from anyone who would like to take up the challenge and help us support people living with sight loss to live independent and fulfilled lives." The original 220 fundraising goal was far exceeded thanks to widespread support, including a £500 donation from the Great Yarmouth Lions Club. Vision Norfolk supports people living with sight loss across the county, helping them live independently. Vision impaired people can visit its three local hubs in Norwich, King's Lynn and Great Yarmouth to seek advice and learn about new equipment available. It helps and supports around 4,000 vision impaired people.
A man has appeared in court in an electric wheelchair following a 17-hour police siege at a bungalow in Norfolk. Darren Mahoney, 53, was at Norwich Magistrates Court on Tuesday afternoon following an incident at his home in Potter's Field, Galston, in which he is said to have threatened his neighbour with a loaded crossbow. The weekend standoff lasted 17 hours and saw Mahoney arrested and then charged with causing an affray and possession of a zombie-style knife. Mahoney denied the affray charge but admitted to possessing the knife. The court heard Mahoney cocked and aimed the crossbow at his neighbour, who then ducked and told his wife to call the police. The neighbour had gone out to talk to Mahoney on Sunday morning after hearing loud bangs. At the end of the 17-hour siege, which involved armed police and a drone unit, officers found the zombie-style machete and petrol bomb-like weapons, the court heard. The siege ended in the early hours of Monday morning. Jonathan Perkins, representing Mahoney, said his client used the crossbow to shoot rats in his garden and lived a solitary life. Speaking in the dock, Mahoney claimed the crossbow had been resting on the footplate of his electric wheelchair and was not intended to be used. It was said he had been in disputes with his neighbours since 2021 and that insults were traded in the morning before the standoff. Mahoney appeared in an electric wheelchair after he refused to use a non-electric replacement provided by the court, leading to a lengthy delay in his hearing. The court heard that the 53-year-old suffered from a degenerative disc disease caused by an industrial accident in 2008 when he was crushed by a steel roll. Mahoney, who was remanded, will next appear in court via video link on October the 1st at Norwich Magistrates Court before a hearing at Norwich Crown Court on November the 6th.
It sounds like something from a sci-fi movie, Wavewalker 1 versus TO6. But off the coast of Great Yarmouth, a technological drama is unfolding as a giant walking barge dismantles a towering wind turbine gutted by fire 2 years ago. Wave Walker 1 has been working at the wreck of Turbine TO6 on the Scroby Sands offshore wind farm, recently removing two of its blades. TO6 was destroyed on August 15, 2023, when flames tore through its nacelle, the turbine's heart housing its generator, leaving behind a blackened skeletal frame. Now, RWE is overseeing its demolition, with the operation expected to run into mid-October. The company said that the work involves extracting the turbine's burned-out nacelle blades and the upper section of its tower, although no works will be undertaken on the foundation at this time. On the day of the fire, flames engulfed the turbine, sending thick plumes of black smoke billowing across the North Sea from the wind farm array, which is situated 1.5 miles, 2.5 kilometres off the coast of Great Yarmouth, with the blaze visible from Lowestoft and miles away. The fire resulted in the total operational loss of the turbine. Following the blaze, drones and inspections kept a close watch on the damaged turbine, but its continued presence has raised environmental and safety concerns. The Wave Walker 1 is described as an innovative eight-legged, self-contained walking jack-up, capable of operating safely and effectively in rough seas, surfed zones on beaches, in shallow transition zones, and in other intertidal locations. The self-contained walking jack-up barge has the ability to independently walk into the position without the requirement to float. Commissioned in 2004, Scroby Sands was one of the UK's first commercial offshore wind farms, its 30 turbines generating enough electricity to power more than 48,000 homes.
Broads among UK's best weekend breaks. The Norfolk Broads have been named among the UK's best spots for a family break. The Times has compiled a list of top family-friendly weekend breaks to make the most of before the year is over. From the Scottish Highlands to Cornwall, several locations around the UK made it into the final 14. A spot in the idyllic and rural Norfolk Broads is among the top picks. According to the Times, Hall Farm in Horning nails the family-friendly weekend break. Located outside the village, close to the Anton Bure, visitors can choose to stay in a bell tent or a quaint cottage. Hall Farm Lake is popular for anglers, and there is indoor entertainment too for rainy days, including a pool table, table tennis, table football and board games. Nearby is Bewilderwood Adventure Park, Bure Valley Railway and Wroxham Barn, where little visitors can pet the goats and donkeys.
Two secondary schools in Norfolk will now share the same senior principal in a move described as truly exciting. Ormiston Academies Trust has announced that Simon Gilbert Barnum will oversee both Ormiston Venture Academy in Galston and Flegg High Ormiston Academy in Martham. Having already served as principal of the Galston School for the past 13 years, he now takes on the role of senior principal across both academies, and he will be supported by senior vice principals Nicole Rossage, Dave Richards and Jodie Gilbert Barnum. Mr. Gilbert Barnum said, "Venture's success has been built by our staff, our students and our community. It has been a truly collective effort. Now we're taking what we've learnt and sharing it across both schools, working together, side by side, to make the same level of excellence as a reality for all." Parents and carers are invited to see the transmation for themselves at Flegg High School's open evening on Wednesday, October the 2nd, from 5pm to 7pm. Mr Gilbert Barnum also said, "There is real momentum at Flegg. We're building on that by working collaboratively with staff and students from both schools, contributing to every stage of the journey. This is just the start of something truly exciting. Together, we're beginning to have an exciting journey. Two schools, one vision, and a shared belief that every child deserves a world-class education." Earlier this year, Venture was awarded outstanding in every category by Ofsted. Nicole Rossage, Senior Vice Principal for Behaviour and Inclusion, said, "We're seeing students at both schools already collaborating. They're contributing to student unions, shaping their learning environments and sharing ideas. When students feel valued and part of something bigger, they thrive. And that's exactly what's happening," she added.
A lifeboat was launched after a member of the public mistook a seal for a Labrador in difficulty off the coast. The call came in at Galston at around 12:30 last Monday. Crews from the Great Yarmouth and Galston lifeboat sent the inshore lifeboat John Rantree and searched the area but could not find anything. The volunteers discussed it with the Galston Coast Guard and decided it was likely a seal and not a dog that had been spotted. And they were all stood down and returned to the station.
Galston Cliffs Park Run welcomed 504 runners, joggers and walkers for an event number 785 last Saturday morning, with participants undeterred by the threat of dodgy weather. The weekly community event once again showcased a fantastic turnout, including new faces and representatives from 40 different clubs. Leading the field was Robert Chainery, who crossed the finish line as the first male in an impressive 17 minutes and 18 seconds. Kayla Lee Nurse was the fastest female, finishing in 21:55. Elaine Albrow, running strongly in the heart of the pack, completed her run in 28:58. A total of 74 new personal bests were recorded, demonstrating the determination and progress of many regulars and newcomers alike. Milestones were achieved as Alice Bishop completed her 100th park run. Birthdays were also celebrated, with Lauren marking her 30th, Julia her 70th, and Graham Sampson his 80th. The vegan running group made a notable appearance, supporting each other across the finish line and adding to the sense of camaraderie on the cliffs. 50 individuals, including Philip Laurier, who has now reached his 700th, volunteered.
The oil tanker that collided with a cargo ship in the North Sea earlier this year is set to leave Yarmouth Port tomorrow. The Stena Immaculate was carrying jet fuel for the US military when it was hit by the Portuguese-registered Solong container ship off the Humber estuary in March, causing large fires and damage to both vehicles as fuel spilled into the sea. Stena Immaculate was taken to Great Yarmouth's Outer Harbour for further assessment a month later, and is now expected to leave port on Wednesday, September the 24th. Port timetables show that the ship will be tugged to Cockle Buoy, which is 1.5 miles or 2.5 kilometres off the coast of Winterton, but no details have been released about its onward journey. Stena Immaculate was carrying more than 220 barrels of aviation fuel in 16 cargo tanks when it was struck in an accident that breached one of the tanks. Aviation fuel is approximately 50 times more toxic to aquatic life than diesel and crude oil, according to Professor Alastair Grant of the UEA School of Environmental Sciences. Port Director Richard Goffin said the Port of Great Yarmouth welcomed Stena Immaculate earlier this year in partnership with the Department for Transport, the Maritime Coast Guard Agency and the vessel's owners. In our role as statutory harbour authority and as an open port, we have a responsibility to provide safe havens for vessels, he said. Duties of this kind and matter are a routine operation for ports, and at all times we strictly adhere to UK safety regulations and international maritime standards. The Russian captain of Salong, Vladimir Mutin, has pleaded not guilty to the manslaughter of one of his crew after Filipino national Mark Angelo Pernia died in the disaster. All 23 people on the tanker were rescued, along with 13 crew from the Salong, but Mr. Pernia, 38, could not be located. A further hearing was held earlier this month, ahead of the defendant's trial in January next year.
A grieving mother has questioned the support received by her 26-year-old son in the months before his death. Joseph Rogerson died after being struck by a train near Buckenham Railway Station close to Strumpshaw on March the 18th this year. An inquest into his death was held at Norfolk Coroner's Court on Tuesday, September the 23rd. The hearing was told Mr. Rogerson was born in Southend in Essex in 1998 and moved with his family to Blowfield in 2005. His mother, Caroline Rogerson, wrote a statement prior to the hearing, and this was read out during the inquest. She described a wonderful childhood in rural Norfolk, where her son had 2 acres of garden to play in with his sisters and friends. She said teachers sometimes found him vacant and struggling to concentrate, and one suggested he take up sport to help him burn off some energy. At Acle High School, Mr. Rogerson made many friends, but had little interest in lessons or sport, regarding school mainly as a place to socialise. After leaving school, he worked as a car salesman and excelled in the role. The inquest heard, but his social life grew busier and he began to struggle with early mornings. At 18 years old, he met his girlfriend and 4 years later, the couple bought a small house together. The inquest heard Mr. Rogerson developed a drinking problem, using alcohol to quiet the voices in his head. By 2023, his mental health had declined and he had left his job. In 2024, his partner ended their relationship and he moved into shared accommodation and later back home with his family. In January this year, he completed a detox program with the support of the charity Change, Grow, Live. He said he wanted the situation to change, his mother said. But he began drinking again and on March the 14th was taken to A&E at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital after harming himself while intoxicated. Subsequently, when he was found near Strumpshaw, a rucksack containing bottles of alcohol was discovered at the scene. The court heard he suffered fatal injuries to his head and limbs. His GP told the inquest that Mr. Rogerson had not always requested his medication on time and said in hindsight the surgery could have called him in for review. Ms. Rogerson also raised concern about the treatment her son received, saying it did not address the root cause of his problems. Mr. Rogerson had been living in Cromer off Overstrand Road at the time of his death. Joanna Thompson, area coroner for Norfolk, concluded that he had died from fatal injuries after taking his own life while in a disturbed state of mind. and she offered her sincere condolences to Mr. Rogerson's family and friends.
The couple has dropped their plans for new housing in Mortby after objections from council officials. The application was to change the use of 6 holiday-let barn conversions and 2 managers' houses into 9 homes at Lower Wood Farm on Browns Lane in Mortby. A document submitted with the bid said the holiday-let business was no longer a viable option for the future of the couple who own the property and are approaching retirement, but the plans faced opposition from council officials. A planning officer at the Borough Council said the site was located outside development limits and would result in the loss of tourist accommodation and has poor access to the services and facilities. Highways also objected over the extra traffic on the road and the site's distance from local services. The applicants have now withdrawn their proposal.
Well, that's it for this week's news, but if you have a few minutes to spare, keep listening for Grapevine Extra. Welcome to Grapevine Extra, where this week the three ladies have a good old reminiscence over bikes, teddies and the flicks.
Right, so I'd like to just talk a little bit about cycling and, you know, my memories from the old days when I did cycle. I have to admit I don't now, but I used to. And the days when we all cycled. My first memory of anything to do with cycling was when I had a much-loved and much-wanted 3-wheeler trike on Christmas morning when I was 4 years old. And I woke up and this 3-wheeler trike, it had spokes, not solid wheels, it had spokes and was, was at the bottom of my bed. And I was so thrilled with it, still in my little pyjamas. My grandmother, who was sort of hovering about, produced a thick fur glove which she put on the saddle of this little trike. And I rode it up and down the hall, ending up in the bathroom and colliding with the toilet. But it was great fun, and I never forgot it. I just loved that little trike. And every time I misbehaved, the threat was, if you don't do as you're told, I shall put a piece in the mercury and sell your trike. That soon brought me into line, I can tell you. But anyway, then that followed on from riding on the crossbar of Dad's bike and having lovely trips around the countryside. I quickly learnt so much about all the lanes and places, you know, around Galston, the surrounding countryside, Lound and Bradwell and, you know, all round and about. And I think I didn't have a proper seat on Dad's bike. I think it was a cushion strapped onto the crossbar. I don't know what health and safety would have said about that if that had happened these days, but I certainly never came to any harm.
You were lucky to have a cushion. Most people didn't.
No, yes, well, there you go.
Awful thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I can remember one particular day. It wouldn't have been very long after the war, and we were on Herringfleet Road. There used to be a railway line along there, of course, and there used to be driveways which sort of led down to big houses by the river. My memory of all that is a little bit hazy, but one thing I do remember is that we were going downhill and we were going at a fair old speed,
And in front of us, apparently, was a swarm of hornets. I didn't know they were hornets.
Nice.
I mean, Dad couldn't stop because we were going too quickly. Mm. So he put his hand in front of my face to keep them away from my eyes, and we just rode through them. Well, I wasn't in the least bit bothered. I just thought they were big bees. Mm. So, you know, so that was that. And that was great. And, you know, then later on, as time passed, and I learnt to ride on Mum's bike. Two wheels. That was a real step up, I suppose you might say. And meanwhile, I've been saving up all my pocket money over the years. And when I was about 11 or 12, I had enough saved up to buy a bike of my own, which I was very, very proud of and rode for a lot of years. I saved all my pocket money in the post office. Mind you, I couldn't really claim any credit for it. I was just told that was what I'd got to do, and I wasn't to waste this pocket money and save up for a bike. So that was what I did. And when one or two people implied that my parents had bought my bike for me because I'd passed the 11 plus, I was most offended. No, I'd saved up for it. It wasn't that. And cycling, then later on, of course, cycling to school when the girls' high school moved from Trafalgar Road in Yarmouth up to Lyngrove in Gorleston. From where I lived, cycling to school was a daily event, and, you know, that was great. I really enjoyed doing that. Of course, we cycled in all weathers. We all did. You know, if we got soaking wet, well, we got soaking wet, and if we were cold, well, we were cold. And if there was ice on the road, we had to be extra careful, and that was where it was. But around age about 24, of course, I got my first car. And my beloved bicycle was sold off to a friend who I'm told enjoyed riding it for many years. And that was it. But I've got very, very happy memories of my little trike that I started with and the bikes and the swarm of hornets, which was great fun, really, when I look back on it.
It was a real thrill, wasn't it, at Christmas, to just come down and see that. I remember that. When my bike was indoors,
oh,
waiting
lovely.
For me.
Yes.
And whatever else I got, and apart from my lovely Rupert annuals and whatnot, I was very blessed and very lucky to have that. But that was one thrill that really got me. I thought, I've got a bike, I can escape.
Yes, yes. You know. It was a feeling of freedom and independence,
yes.
And everything,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yes, it was
not
great.
Not to mention I went out, pardon my expression, arse over tip. But that's the first time I went over the handlebars. But apart from that, yeah.
No, I never had a new bike. My father used to buy old ones, and all my friends had nice shiny chrome handlebars, and mine would be painted silver.
Oh,
but it
right.
didn't matter.
No.
You know, it
that was
still,
your bike.
Still had two wheels and pedals, and it
yes,
went.
It
yes,
yeah,
yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Did you have a bike, Stephen?
Yes, and I rode all the time going to school and everything.
Yeah,
that
we all did, didn't we?
Yes, that's what we did. Yes, yes.
And come by going down the hill a bit too fast.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Mm. So what's the plan? Have we got one?
You do. You want to talk about, my dear?
Oh,
see,
well.
I'm nice to you, you see, but you're not always nice to me, are you?
Oh, come on.
Right, well, I'm going to tell you a very special story. He was my first love. Such a deep relationship which has lasted all my life.
I know who you're going to talk about.
I couldn't even walk or talk
mm-hmm.
when we were initially introduced, and yet here he is, still giving me pleasure 73 years later. I am, of course, referring to my Teddy, given to me at birth by my loving parents. Eddie, my Teddy, I mean, what else would they have called him?
The original
Eddie the Teddy.
Yeah, it was original, yeah. Well, he was only 8 inches long, stretched out. A tiddly little Teddy.
Oh.
He was a Chad Valley make with gorgeous golden fur and bottle green velvet paws. He had such a beautiful face and gorgeous brown eyes. Sweet little smile. And the cutest little back fabric nose, round, tufty, sort of sticky-up ears. Just the right size for a little person. And he was so cuddly. And we were inseparable from moment one, but life wasn't always easy for Eddie. The first disaster for us both was when I'd grown up to as big as 2. Wow, that was a long time ago now. Anyway, but no, moving on.
I never said a word.
No, I know you didn't. Anyway, my mother told me this story. We were on our way out to visit one of her friends, and while she was fetching our coats, having left me in a safe place, as to be said, I found the Vaseline which Mummy had previously liberally applied to me for nappy rash prevention. Well, this was obviously what you did, I thought, and my mother was horrified to find that I'd covered Eddie in it. And my clothes as well, of course.
Of course.
Although I don't remember the incident, together with, I suspect, my mother's wrath, I do remember the outcome. Eddie had to be seriously washed, and in doing so, all his fur fell out, leaving now just a... Are you ready?
He was a bear, Teddy.
He was. He was.
Instead of a teddy bear.
On the floor.
Yes, possibly.
Yeah. So, anyway, he had to be seriously washed, and in doing so, all his fur fell out, leaving now just a canvas little bear.
Oh.
No, didn't end there, though, because being kapok-filled, he took ages to dry, and he was pegged up on the linen line unceremoniously by his ears.
They told him he got alopecia, I suppose. Oh.
Anyway, I'd stand underneath him lovingly, wishing and crying to have him back with me. So upset was I that my parents thought a replacement would be the answer. And I woke up one morning to find Horace at the bottom of my cot. I know, don't ask me where the name came from. I have no idea. But my mother had painstakingly knitted Horace a vest, a pair of green trousers with braces and a matching jacket. Now, apparently, I was not impressed. And, well, who would be when your beloved Ted was dangling by his ears still after several days?
Well, yes, of course.
Then, hallelujah, he was dry. And we were invited, united. And immediately Horace was denuded and his clothes put upon Eddie, who was smaller, albeit not much. But it necessitated me wrapping his braces around his neck in order to keep up the trousers. Sleeves rolled up and buttons of the jacket pushed into the knitting rather than the buttonholes to ensure a better fit. The vest wasn't a problem because I just sort of pushed those into the trousers. And Horace was, needless to say, immediately discarded.
Oh.
Yeah, more than that, Margaret. More than that. Okay, that's better. There was another occasion when he got left at my grandmother's cottage. Each Wednesday, Mum and I would board the number 62 bus from Castle Meadow in Norwich to Strumpshaw. This fateful day, it was raining, and as we left Nanny's, my mum thought she had put Eddie into her bag to save him from yet another soaking. Loads of tears on the bus when we discovered said Ted had been left behind. You can know her again now if you want. Okay. No car in those days and no phones and only 2 buses a week, one on a Wednesday and the other on a Saturday. Now, Nanny lived next door to a pub, so Mum phoned and left a message to be passed to Nanny, re-Eddie. Great distress for 3 days. Nanny then entrusted Eddie to the bus driver the following Saturday, and we, Mum and I, were united again with one unscathed bear who'd ridden under the watchful eye of the driver on his dashboard. He got out of the bus at Chapel Field and placed him carefully into my long-awaiting arms.
Oh.
He was obviously a dad himself, feeling my mother's pain. Another trauma occurred on holiday. Every year we stayed for 2 weeks at Mrs. Baker's B&B in Pakefield. I was now too old to carry Eddie around all the time, but it was vital that he came along. And one day, returning from a lovely day on the beach, horror of horror, Eddie was not on my bed.
No.
Panic set in
as
my parents feared the worst, that he'd got entangled with the bedding and sent to the laundry when Mrs. Baker had changed the sheets. Thankfully, great jubilation when we eventually found him so undignifiedly stuffed in a drawer.
Oh.
I mean, who would dream of doing that?
Very dare
to such a precious bear.
I mean, he would.
Anyway, but at the end of the day, all was well, and I did forgive Mrs. Baker. I could go on and on about the adventures of Ed, my Ted, but to close, I'll share with you that even now, Eddie takes pride of place in my bedroom.
He does.
See, he does, doesn't he?
Whenever I come, I speak to
him. You do, don't you? He's still wearing his vest and trousers. I'm not sure what happened to the jacket, to be truthful, but he's still got the vest and his trousers on. He's delicate, with his head's a bit wobbly, and his capock showing through a hole in his forehead. The surrounding fabrics is way too fragile to repair, so it's just sort of sitting there with a little, like, mole on his forehead.
Of course.
But he's still as precious as when we first met.
That's
the story of Ed My
Lovely
Ted.
Ed the Ted, yes.
And it has to be said that your mum did away with your Teddy, didn't
she? No, my grandmother.
Yeah.
Yes, she prayed she did.
And?
Unceremoniously, and?
And Horace.
Yes.
Said Horace is now, I gave Horace to Margaret.
Yes, yes, and I rechristened him Mickey.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Does he know that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, I explained it all to him.
We take the Mickey out of Margaret because Margaret's got the biggest one of the lot.
Yeah.
And he sits on the chair. We have to move him when I want to sit down, don't we?
Yeah. That's right.
And,
yes,
his heart.
Do.
He sits on the floor with his little mates.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
We shouldn't really take the Mickey out of you because we're as bad as you are.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, I won him in a Name the Bear competition. You see, so, I mean, as you do.
Like you do.
Yes, I got Rupert and Theodore. They're still around somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. Sweet.
But there we are. So that's the tale of Edward the Bear.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
so what have you got for us?
Well, now, I have got to talk to you two about, and maybe you might even chip in, Stephen, and see what you think about. This is about the old films. I came across this article in the Eastern Daily Press the other day, headed, "When a Trip to the Flea Pit Was an Uncomfortable Experience," you see. Well, that's going to get back to the old cinemas. You probably don't even remember all of that, do you, Stephen? You're not old enough, do you think? Well, maybe not. Anyway, this...
Maybe 70s for me.
Then, yeah. Well, Emma, who is a lovely writer, recalls her visits to the cinema when cigarette smoke filled the air and the seats were threadbare. She said, "I know it's handy to be able to access films on demand from the comfort of your own living room, but for me, it lacks the romance of a night out at the cinema, watching the drama unfold on the big screen. Many a courtship," and if you listen to this, "many a courtship must have begun with a date at the local cinema," and I reckon they still do.
Mm-hmm.
"But I fear that joy of actually going out for an evening for something future generations may never experience. And at one time, in the small town close to where my parents grew up, there were two cinemas. The building themselves were quite magnificent, often Art Deco or Victorian. And during the late 1940s and early 50s, my mum can remember a trip to the cinema as something special and rare, given that she could not afford to go frequently. Well, I was very lucky there because I used to go with my mum to the Collie and the Palace when I was off school holidays, and she used to smoke. She used to provide that smoke because she had one of those old Sobrani cigarettes. You probably never heard of them. They're flat. They were flat. I wondered how she used to manage them. But they were Turkish fags. She always had one of them, so I encountered that.
Now tell the people what you had.
Oh.
And how embarrassing were you?
Yes. I
was a very embarrassing child. Well, I probably still am, but not a child, but anyway.
Yeah.
Anyhow, being the actor in me, because I've always been that way on, you see, I suppose I thought to myself, well, what they can do, I can do better. So I have a little tin, in which I cut up straws. They were my cigarettes, you see, so that when they had a fag, any of them, then I had a little straw. And I had a little lighter thing like that that clicked. That was my lighter. But also, I had a pipe. I had a little pipe, a proper little briar pipe. And I stuffed cotton wool in the top and then light that.
You wonder why your mother stopped taking you to the cinema.
Yes, I know. She was so embarrassed she stopped in the end. I also took a walking stick with me, like a little Charlie Chaplin walking stick, which I had. We were swinging down the street with that.
And how old were we at the time?
I can't remember, but I wasn't that young, I don't think. Anyway, I started my idiosyncrasies even then, you see.
Mm.
But no, that's what happened to me in the pictures, but I did enjoy the pictures.
Okay.
I hope everybody else did, but they're probably laughing at me so much they didn't notice what was on, I reckon.
Oh, the old collie and the old palace and Gloucester.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they were wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
And she goes on talking about, I remember sitting in the cinema, not being able to see the screen for smoke. And then during the intermission, usherettes with torches, this is true, would come round with ice creams in a tray, but they also... Do you remember we used to have a cup of tea at the Collie? We used to have a cup of tea.
No, I don't remember that. I've heard my mother talk about it.
Ah, well, that was way before you then,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
But yes, they bring a cup of tea, and that was lovely. But they used to do that in the theatres in London, you know. I don't know if you knew that, but they did. And in London, because people used to get ever so annoyed, because some of the old girls who come up from the country to see the film had to leave early because they got a bus to catch or something or other, you see. So they'd put their empty cups and that on the edge of the stage. Right. And so, of course, when the play was on and the curtain came down, the cups went with it. I always remember that.
Yeah, I remember reading about that in one of Noel Coward's short stories.
That's right.
I think it might have been in Star Quality.
It probably was. I probably read. Anyway, this writer goes on to say that by the time that I went to school, the cinema was frequented and affectionately known as the Flea Pit. In no way could you describe it as posh. Well, this is true. In the late 70s, I recall going to see Saturday Night Fever with my friend Lisa and her mum, and then Grease. Now, you can talk about Grease because that's gone into a musical, hasn't it?
Is a good advert coming up here.
Yeah.
Went to the Players Theatre last Sunday in Lowestoft and saw Grease by the Players Theatre Company, and it was amazing. In fact, my friend who I went with actually said, isn't it a shame you can't bottle that?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was wonderful. It just anyway,
how lovely.
We digress.
Well, yes, but she always went on to say that no trip to the Flea Pit was a comfortable experience. The seats were so well worn that the springs were poking out through the padding. Well, that is true, which had become eroded after years of cinema goings. Fidgety bottoms. Now, what were they doing fidgety bottoms for? Because they do remember. In the Collie, there were little seats of two.
Up
there at the back.
At the back.
Yeah,
yes,
I wonder what
they
were doing on them.
Oh, well, the mind does rather boggle.
Yes. I was too young to know about that then. But
but you were a policeman later.
Well, yes, I soon found out. A lot of them were under the pier, dear. Yes. Anyway.
Moving swiftly on, yes.
And I've just told you about those antics then of mine. And then, of course, apart from the ice cream and that and the little tubs with the wooden spoon, remember?
The
wooden spoon.
Yes.
They're plastic now, aren't they?
Yes.
And they cost a lot more money. Boxes of fruit gums, Smarties or fruit pastilles were always on, available,
yes,
weren't they?
Yes, that's right. They were.
I like the red ones.
That's right. Yeah. Now, do you remember, Margaret?
We used
Margaret?
To read red ones for lipstick, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did, yeah. do you remember, Margaret, Mr. Attree?
Used to be Douglas Attree,
the Coliseum in Galston.
Yes.
Well, he was the boss, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
He was quite a stocky man, wasn't he?
Yes.
And he used to wander up and down, and so did that lovely little man who was in his gold braid.
Oh, yes.
I've forgotten his name, but...
No, I can't remember his name. He had lovely silver hair, didn't he?
That's right. Yes.
I mean, I do remember when they showed one of the early James Bond films.
Yeah.
I think it was From Russia With Love. Anyway, my mother, my grandmother and I, we'd all come to see this.
Yeah.
And this lovely old commissioner, it was relating how an old boy from the country had said, Corey said I enjoyed that. I've never known so much excitement, not never since the war. It was just lovely.
Lovely, isn't it? Mm, yeah.
Yes.
And you used to try and find somebody, didn't you, cause to try and get in with?
Oh, yes.
You know, because you weren't...
You weren't old enough.
Yeah, old enough. And if you knew somebody... See, you couldn't dare do that today, could you?
You might go up to almost a stranger and say, take me in this.
You're asking for trouble, aren't you? Yeah. But, you know, it never happened, that sort of thing. It was just so nice. And people were kind, weren't they?
They were.
And they would take you in and all the rest of it. But, so that's it. But I was just thinking about all the old films now. Come on, you two. You must surely think about some of the films that are the older ones that you used to enjoy.
Well, I remember going to see the Dam Busters with school friends.
Yes.
That was at the Palace.
Yeah.
And, it was absolutely thrilling.
I went and got the book after that.
Yes.
Because it was so exciting, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, it was. I mean, the very first time, I do remember the very first time I ever went to the Petrus, it was a Colosseum. And I was born in 43, and this was being 48, because it was the royal wedding of Princess Elizabeth, as she was then, and...
47.
Pardon? 47. Oh, 47. Oh, right, OK. Well, fair enough, but I do remember that. And Philip Mountbatten.
Yes.
And I just couldn't get hold of the idea that the people were not really there. You know, I was much too young to understand what was behind it all. Lovely.
Well, I don't go quite back as far as you do, and I wasn't in this. I wasn't in Galston at the time. My first encounter into the cinema was at the ABC down Prince of Wales Road in Norwich.
Yes.
And I went there with a friend, and neither of us had been to the cinema before. And the front row was empty, and so we thought, oh, we'll go and sit there. And so she and I sat, and we watched Help, the Beatles film Help, for the first time. Sort of sat back in our seats with this huge screen in front of us, because we thought there was, you know, oh, nobody's in the front row. That's a good place.
What about that woman who always came and sat down with this great big hat? Right,
yeah, well, she couldn't do that. She couldn't do that in front of the front row, could she, Lisa? It was one thing.
And you sort of sat there for the whole Blooming performance trying to squint round this woman.
Yeah, dodge it.
Oh, dear. But it's lovely to recall the old memories, isn't it?
It is.
And to know that all this modern stuff of screening or whatever they're doing hasn't taken the joy away from us going to pictures. Where did you go the other day? You went to see a film, didn't you?
It was amazing. Yeah, that was at the Palace.
That was at the Palace. Which is very different now, isn't it?
Indeed. And we went to see... same girl I went to see Greece with, actually. We went to see Downton.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, amazing. It's the last one. And I'm not going to tell anybody about it, because hopefully you'll see it. But it was incredibly emotional. I'm going to rest my case, because I know these two ladies here with me are going to see it, so I'm not going to say anything more.
Absolutely. Yes, well, there we are. So we've talked all about that, haven't we?
so I'm going to just tell you a joke. Right. And so there were two sisters. One was blonde and she was called Susie. And the other was a brunette and she was called Sarah. And they inherited a farm. Now, neither of them knew anything about running a farm, and it quickly fell into financial difficulty, so much that they were in danger of bankruptcy. So what were they going to do? One day, Sarah had a brainwave. Now, if we were able to buy our own bull, she said to Susie, then we could breed our own cattle. So Susie agreed, and Sarah went into town where she successfully negotiated for a bull. She then went into the post office. This was long before mobile phones were commonplace. And so she went to the post office and she asked the postmistress to send a telegram to Susie asking her to hitch up the trailer and come to collect the bull. "Well, I can," said the postmistress, "but it will be very expensive. Do you know, it's 99 pence a word." And Sarah thought for a bit and then she said, "I know. Just send her the word comfortable." "Okay," said the postmistress, "but how on earth will Susie know what you mean?" "Oh, that's no problem," said Sarah, "because Susie's not too bright. She's not a great reader and will break each word down so she will read it as comfortable."
I think that's really good.
You like that?
I like that one.
That's clever.
That's a good one.
Okay.
And that's clean, isn't it?
But I only tell you clean jokes.
Oh, that's me who told the other
jokes.
Sorry.
Say anyway, no more.
Anyway, what are you going to do now then, Dust?
I don't know, really. Well,
cue Dust.
I've got to tell you, my friends out there, because we haven't talked about squit lately, have we? But, you know, we must keep the old Norfolk accent going, mustn't we? Because it's ever so important. And I wanted to tell you, too, that dear old Keith Skipper, now you must all remember dear old Keith Skipper, he have not been well lately. And he had gone into a home. This is true. He's gone into a home. And he's gone to Overstrand with his wife. And so he's living there. So when I saw that in the paper, I had to write to him because I knew old Keith long ago. And he always remembered whatever we did together. He used to come to Shrublands and help me and all the rest of it. And I said, "I don't expect you'll remember all this." Well, he did. And he wrote me back a card himself, which I thought was absolutely lovely. That was beautiful. So if any of you ever feel like writing to Keith Skipper, he's at a little home in Overstrand and you can find that out to see where he is. But he's getting on all right and that's good. But I tell you what, I was talking to my friend Gertie again the other day, Yes, her again. I know she get on your wits, she do mine, but sometimes, but there you are. She say to me, she wasn't very nice either.
Really?
She say, you haven't been very well lately, have you? I say, "Well, no, but I'm better now, thank you very much." So she say, she said, "I think," she say, you're in your second childhood now." I say, "What you mean?" I say, "I aren't." "Well, not unless," I say, "you count sleeping in the day and needing the toilet six times in the middle of the night, or I drop off in the middle of a conversation that I'm having with myself. I say, "I know I'm a bit getting up the tooth." That should be teeth, but then that's ageing for you, isn't it? "And I don't read any more of them Change Your Life books, you know, because," I say, "I ain't got to start now, too late." She say, she say, "You can do it, at least what you say and you like, can't you? Say what you like and take a few liberties." I say, "That you can." And I say, "Do you know you can even use your false teeth to crimp your pastry with if you want to? I may be nearly 90, well, I'm over 90 now, on the outside, but I tell you what, I'm only 20 on the inside, and that's the trouble, because you see, it's your outside that have to carry your inside all about, and that's what I find difficult at the minute, however." And she said to me, "I suppose one of old Mabel's friends is still around." I say, "Yes." I say, "I don't think she can get any new ones."
no.
So I say, and she say, well, at least Gail Doris don't go in for gossip. I say, no, I know. But that's because she's got no friends to speak about anymore. So she say me, all you read about these days, she say, is how smoking and drinking is hully bad for you. I say, well, there's only one thing for that in my girl, isn't there? Give up reading.
Okay.
And she say, I saw this, she say, what I saw the other day, she say, I must tell you about that. She say, I saw this old bloke lying in the gutter up Norwich. She say, and a policeman went over to him. He say, are you all right, my man? He say, are you right, old partner? He say, what are you doing lying down there? He said, no, I'm all right, thank you, officer. He said, I'm all right. He say, I just found this here parking space. So he said, I sent my missus to buy a car. That's how long it take to find one. You know about that hospital, don't you? A dreadful one.
Yes, don't dreadful. Talk about parking
dreadful.
There.
Dreadful.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh,
oh, dear, oh, dear.
That put you right off.
That do put you right off. Yeah. And I say, I thought myself, she's got to get nasty with me in a minute, so I say to her, Gertie.
Who's this, Gertie?
Gertie, yeah. Yeah. I say, do you know that two of your hens, because she keep chickens, you know.
Does she?
I say, yeah. I say, two of your hens ain't got to lay no more eggs. They stop laying, you know. So she say, why? I say, because I never run them over on the way here. She say, do you remember when we were so poor? She say, we used to knock a hole in next door's wall on a Sunday lunch so we could dip our crusts in their gravy. I say, I do that indeed. And then, she says all sorts of things to me.
Did she?
Yes.
Where did you meet her then?
What, Gertie?
Yeah.
Oh, we met when we were at school.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, we know each other quite well, really, now. And we were looking at some photographs, and she say, that one don't really do me justice, you know. And I say to her, well, you don't want justice, dear, you want mercy. She say, you've got your hat on the wrong way again. I say, so what? How do you know which way I'm going? She said, ah, but she said, when I was young, I had one of them hourglass, them lovely hourglass figures, you know. I still got it, you see. I say, yeah, but it's getting a lot later than you think, isn't it? She say, yeah, well, at least I always know how to speak my mind. I said, well, that limit the conversation, don't it?
Dear.
I better not tell you any more of that. Oh, I say, did you notice that fog last night? She say, no, nothing ever wake me up. Think about that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And she say, talking of sleep, she say, I'll never marry a man who snore, you know. I say, well, you want to be very careful how you find out, old girl. So I better tell you a little bit of good advice that I got the other day. As old Aunt Agatha, she's good at this, you know. She say, well, she say, don't forget, always remember to keep one foot on the ground when you lift the other one up.
Well, that's very
good. That's quite
advice.
Good, isn't it? Yes. I like
advice,
that.
Yeah.
I like that, yes. So I'm going to leave you with a poem. I writ a long time ago. Many years ago, I writ this poem. And just, well, I writ two.
Is that more squid?
No, that ain't squid. Well, I don't think that is.
That make a change.
Well, I don't think that's squid, because, you see, it just shows you that nothing really changes at all. I got one about the Norfolk Show, or I got one about Saturday afternoons at Goulston. Now, which one would you like?
Saturday.
Your choice?
Saturday afternoons. All right, in Goulston. All right. I writ this, and I can still smell the things I'm talking about and see what I can see. Saturday afternoons in early old December, them were good old days, if you fair to remember. The clouds would be heavy and the air would be murky. Blast a quick step along the road and you'd soon be feeling perky. You'd step it out, your stride would be bold. The hardy old Norfolk man, he don't feel no cold. Saturday was the day that you wouldn't be without, when your team used to kick the old football about. Up on the wrecker, the happiest of scenes, that was down with the blues and up with the greens. The lights started a fading, but voices you'd hear, a shouting encouragement, right loud and so clear. Come on, Eggie, keep it a-coming. Come on, my heart alive, Gavin, if you went a rummin'. And then at last the match would be over and ended, and those wintry shadows soon had descended. Walking home by the bracken, you'd stop for a rest and see little old birds fly back to their nests. Gardeners were busy and leaves they were sweeping. Old autumn's glory her vigil was keeping. Bonfires were lit, and the smoke could be curling, magical moments fit for old Merlin. Walking along all the back gates, flames would be flickering in them handsome old black grates, and beautiful smells of herring and bloaters, better by far than that diesel from motors. Then indoors you go, get the kettle on, gal. That's been a funny old day, but that's wholly gone well. We'd hold hands in the firelight, a share in our cuppa, and round off the day with our fish and chip supper. Yeah, Saturday afternoons and all them grey Decembers, I can see them now as I watch them dying old embers. Hope you like it, and we'll be back again soon to see you. That is, nice. If you can stand up. Well, I just want to say something to you before I go.
A surprise.
No, hold on. I'll say something to you because this is important. We hope that we are giving you a little bit to laugh about now and again and making you entertained, because the news is quite miserable sometimes, isn't it? So we like to do that. What we would like to know is a little feedback from you sometimes, because we never know whether we're doing any good or not. Give us a little feedback and let us know whether you like us to do these things, because we'd love to hear from you. And I'm sure the others would love to hear from you as well on Grapevine. We want to make it a little bit more interesting and share it with you better. So how about you do that? So we look forward to hearing from you very soon. Bye-bye for now, my loves. God bless you.
OK. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. If you would like to reply to Dusty's request for comments, postal listeners can pop a note in with the returning memory stick, and online listeners can send an email to stories@grapevinegy.org.uk. That's stories@grapevinegy.org.uk. Next week's newsreaders are Andrew and Margaret 1, so we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from everyone at Grapevine, bye for now.